This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we're going to be hearing from Robert Dover, the team chef d'équipe, about the American performances at this year's Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games. But before we hear from Robert, we have an item of news this week and our trainers segment. The USDF announced this week that Janine Malone and Mariel Barnett will be presented with the 2014 Lifetime Achievement Awards at the Salute Gala and Annual Awards Banquet, which will take place on December the 6th, during the Adequan USDF annual convention, which this year will be held in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The recipients of the Lifetime Achievement Award are longtime members of the USDF who have shown a lifetime of dedication to the USDF through volunteering and developing programs, projects, and committees that have contributed to the USDF's mission. And now for our trainers segment this week with Charlotte Bradall, who discusses the topic of youth mentoring. Charlotte was a member of the bronze medal winning team at the 1992 Barcelona Olympic Games. She is an FEI 4-star and USEF S judge and a USDF bronze, silver and gold medalist. Charlotte was recently named as a USDF honorary instructor. Charlotte, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Mentoring youth is a very big topic, isn't it? But there's so many aspects to it and you've had quite a bit of experience, haven't you?
I have. From when I was very, very young, I always had a desire to help out kids. I always knew that I was going to either foster kids or adopt kids. I always felt there were so many kids in the world without parents and kids who needed help that I never felt a need to have my own biological children. And about 15 years ago, my husband and I took a 9-year-old foster son. And 5 years after that, we took in a 14-year-old boy. So at that point, we had two 14-year-olds together. And they both came from very, 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 very bad situations. And it was much more challenging than I think we both had thought. I think we were both very naive about just all you do is give them love and attention and everything be fine. But it wasn't quite like that. But in the end, it all worked out very well, and both of them are now 24 years old and productive members of society and doing very well. And so that was very, very gratifying, but not an easy thing to do. About the same time, I was also contacted by a local mentoring program to see if I would like to mentor some kids. And mentoring is much easier than having foster kids because you just see them when you can. Any time you give them is more than they have, and you try to see them whenever you have the extra time. And that has been very, very, very gratifying experience for me and a lot of fun. And I started out with three kids, which is kind of unusual. Usually you just get one. For some reason, they gave me three, and they were between 6 and 8 years old. And I would see them about once a week, and sometimes all three of them together. Two of them were brothers, and the girl, who was 6 years old, was being raised by her grandparents, so they wanted to have another adult in her life that was a bit younger than them. So typically these kids are in the program because of either the parents want them to have another adult in their life or guardians or whoever is raising them, not always their parents. And so with these kids, I mentored them all since then, and they're now in between 19 and 21. And unfortunately, none of them were into horses. I tried to get them into horses, but they just were not that interested. So that was too bad, but it's still been a very great experience. And of course, always with challenges, but a very gratifying experience. about 8 years.
Well, I was just going to say, Charlotte, you know, it's a very much a two-way thing, isn't it, mentoring? I know you have to give so much, but you also get a lot back in return, don't you?
Oh, yes, you absolutely do. You get a lot in return, and you get to be very, very close with these kids. And even though now they're, you know, they're all over 19, between 19 and 21, and the foster kids, I hear from all of them, and certainly our first foster son calls me mom all the time, and the other kids I still hear from on a regular basis. We still see them and have dinner with them and see how they're doing. So it's very, very gratifying, definitely. About 8 years ago, I was watching the LA News, and there was a video clip about a lady who was running a writing program in Compton to help kids basically stay away from gangs. Her name is Maisha Akbar, and just one of the most amazing women I've ever met in my life. She basically dedicated her whole life to helping these kids. She started out with having a couple of horses in her backyard for her own kids, and pretty soon all the neighbors' kids start knocking on her door. And at this point, I think she's got around 20 horses on the property, and lessons going on all the time, and kids coming and going all day. So she's really been just an amazing blessing in that area. But she invited me to come down and see the program and meet the kids, and I was just very impressed with the whole thing. And so I invited them to come up, for her to come up with kids, and she would bring as many as 10 kids at a time, and they would all bring a few horses. And then my husband and I would put them up in a little hotel down the street, and they would be there for the weekend, and then come up and ride, and I would teach them lessons on their horses as well on a few of mine. And they were just so dedicated to the horses. And I was very impressed to see these kids who had very many of them very difficult upbringings, and yet they were just so sweet and loving with the horses, and I think the horses really changed their lives, or many of them, for sure. Later on, after I have gotten a very trusting relationship with Maisha, she would start to send kids up by themselves. She'd put them on the airport bus down at the LAX, and that bus would go directly to our house, pretty much, and we would pick them up there at the bus stop, and they would come and spend weekends with us. This is usually just two at a time. And again, they would stay at our house and then just ride all weekend long, and I'd send them back home Sunday night. And that was also very gratifying. The kids were great, and they just really, really loved the horses. And we did that for quite a while. At this point, I'm not doing it anymore because the trainers who live much closer than me stepped up to start helping up with the program, including gold medal winning jumper rider Will Simpson. He got really involved and has been absolutely wonderful also with this program. But of course, since he's a jumper rider, most of the kids turn to jumping, and they're doing really, really well. And Will is still very involved with the program and helping to teach them. And other trainers down in LA are helping out as well, so they really don't have a need to come all the way up to me because I'm about 2.5 hours away. But it's a wonderful program, and really, I'm sure, changed many, many of these kids' lives. The program is called Compton Junior Posse. And again, the lady running it, Maisha Akbar, just a really tremendous lady.
Now, how would anyone get involved locally then, Charlotte, if they wanted to get into a mentoring program?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because every area has different programs. Some areas have a program called Big Sister and Big Brother. Yeah, that's what it's called, Big Sister and Big Brother program. And that's been around for a long time, and many areas or cities have that program. In my case, it was a church program, Presbyterian church program, and I think many churches will also have a mentoring program. But also even contacting schools, some schools will have programs like that. But I think every area is a little bit different. But I think if you contact even, the state, they should be able to tell you where to look.
So many different ways to get involved then.
Yes, there is, definitely. And about a year and a half ago, the same program contacted me, said they had a 9-year-old boy named Aiden who really loved horses, really loved animals, but had been around horses. So since the other kids at that point were getting into their, adulthood, I said yes. And so he was the first kid that absolutely really took to the horses and just absolutely loves them. And he lives just down the street from me. It's about 5 minutes away with a single dad. And he is here now all the time. He's just spent all summer here, except for when I'm traveling for judging and things like that. But the rest of the time, he's here from basically 8 o'clock in the morning. The father drops him off, and they pick him up about 4 or 5 at night. And he just wants to be around the horses. And it has really been amazing for his confidence level. Not only being around the horses and being able to ride and do all the things it takes to ride, but also all the attention he gets from not only from me, but from all my clients. And it's really showing in his schoolwork. The teachers have been writing letters to his father about how well he's doing now. So that is really incredibly rewarding to see kids' confidence level just every week. It just gets better and better and better. And that's been a huge gift in my life to have a kid that just totally embraces everything that I do in my life. It's just so much fun. And I have two really wonderful quarter horses that I used to teach lessons on, and he mostly rides them, and they have been also great teachers for him. And he's able to just go and get them ready and come out and start riding, and he's doing really, really well. He's going to be a very good rider, no doubt. So that's been really, really, really fun for me. And I wish that I had more like that. The area that I live in, the kids that get involved with horses typically get into pony club. And for some reason in my area, pony club doesn't encourage so much the dressage. And so I don't get a lot of those kids coming to my barn. And also because I don't have not had school horses in the past. Now I do, though. I have those two quarter horses, and occasionally I'll teach them to my other horses too. And since that, I've had more teenage girls coming here for lessons, and that has been really, really, really great. And I also love not only teaching them but also mentoring them about everything, not just horses, and that's been really fun for me. And whenever I see kids that come here that are really passionate about horses and riding and not afraid to help out, I will always work with them as far as finances. That is not, for sure not going to stop them from riding if they really show they're committed. So that's a lot of fun too. And I'll encourage other trainers to think of themselves as mentors and role models to our future riders. So when you come across a kid who has the passion for the horses and riding, but not the funds, to still give them a chance to do what they love to do.
And we all know that horses do also provide so many skills that are transferable to other ways in other areas of life.
Yeah, they absolutely do. I've also been a little bit involved I've been on the advisory board of our local therapeutic riding program. and get involved with their fundraisers and do exhibitions and things like that. And we'll always hear stories about the difference horses are making in their lives. It's, you know, just tremendous how it changed their lives. And I think horses in general are really a gift in our lives. And they teach you so much. They teach you patience and persistence, responsibility, focus, and they give you so much. And I think we all should share that, the wonderful lives that we live because of the horses, as much as possible.
That's very true. Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed for sharing that with us, Charlotte.
You're welcome.
U.S. Chef to Keep Robert Dover joins me now to recap on this year's Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
Well, congratulations on the great effort there in Normandy by our team. Let's get a recap from you as to how that week unfolded. Obviously, it was a difficult time with the conditions as well, wasn't it?
Well, certainly there were a lot of things that we had to take into consideration regarding the rain and the footing. But in general, the quality of sport was amazing from, I think, all competitors. We saw 36 rides that went over 70%. And I could not have been more thrilled with my American team, considering that many felt, and especially most journalists felt, that we were coming in probably, say, between 7th and 8th place, as predicted. And then I think we pretty much shattered those thoughts with coming in a very clear 4th.
Well, just to clarify how the team was selected, because you were in Europe for a couple of competitions in preparation for the Games, and you took more riders than obviously you needed for the event itself. But tell us how that final selection was made and why you finished up with the 4 that you did going to Normandy.
Well, the selection process was very clear from the beginning, and it allowed for the 8 riders to go, and the 2 that were named directly onto the team had the option of riding in another or both shows that were our mandatory outings, and the other 6 were obliged to ride in both mandatory outings. What then went on to happen was that, of course, Stephen Peters ended up becoming very, very ill before Aachen, and was unable to compete in Aachen, but had already competed in Fritzen and had therefore done all that he was obligated to do in going to one of the 2 mandatory outings in Europe. And then with the rating, with the scores from the rest of them, plus taking into account something that is in our selection criteria, which is the decision of the High Performance Committee and the Selectors Committee with my consultation to determine which athletes would do best to help in the success of our team toward the ability to create a medal-winning team or be as successful as possible. And so all of those factors were taken into account, and the team was then named.
And so there you were with 3 experienced team riders, with Stephen Peters, Adrian Lyle, and Tina Conyard, who had been there before, so to speak, but a rookie on the team, Laura Graves, who proved to be the star of the show for you.
Well, she certainly was just absolutely fantastic. And she had, you know, gone from January when I first saw her in a national show along with Debbie, who had met her in November before, and said, "Robert, you've got to look at this one horse and rider." So we stood together watching her go through a class in January, and it was extremely green and, you know, was maybe a low 60s kind of a ride. But she came over to us afterwards, and I introduced myself and asked her where she was from, and she said Orlando, and I said, "Well, get ready to move." and here's your new trainer, Debbie, and I want you to get very, very serious because this is a really great horse and you ride super, but you need to be now in full training. So she did that. She did everything she needed to do, and it progressed through the rest of the qualifying period up until she made it into Gladstone right at the last moment and proceeded to then be second at Gladstone. And from there, it's sort of a fairy tale story. She went on to Fritzen and was second in both Grand Prix and the Grand Prix Special. Went on to Aachen, where she was again super. And then I think, you know, just proved herself once again, not only that she is a really brilliant young rider and with an extremely scopey and wonderful animal, but the partnership that has molded together over these last months has proven to be just one of those kind of partnerships that audiences and, of course, judges love to see.
Well, let's talk about the Grand Prix performance by your riders then. Talk us through those 2 days, because as we said, we had some very difficult conditions there for you in the arena as well as outside.
Yeah, I mean, it was all, you know, a matter of trying to strategize which would be, of course, you know, the best person to send in first. We determined together that Tina, because she had been an Olympian before and experienced, we would send her in first and hopefully get, you know, a reasonable score toward the beginning of the class. And she did that. She placed, you know, she got just under 70% and sort of led the way, giving Adrian a feeling of confidence later in that day. And Adrian went on to do a very, very nice test and ended up under, you know, again, really rainy and difficult conditions with over 72%. And that was nice because even though it showed us in, I want to say, sixth, I can't remember if it was fifth or sixth place overnight, throwing out the drop score, this is how they did it this year, if you took both scores against both scores of all of the other teams, we were actually in third going and overnight. And so I felt very comfortable with that. That's the way they used to, you know, sort of average things out using all scores that were in going into the night before. And I knew that we had strong rides just as the other teams had strong rides the next day. Well, the rain kept coming. And on the second day, I had Laura go in, and she laid down just an absolutely outstanding ride. And I knew what Stefan could do. So we sort of laid the gauntlet down for the Swedes and the Danes. The Spanish went before us, and I already knew that we were going to be ahead of them on points because I, you know, I could figure out what the best of their riders could do. So whereas Spain had been, I think, third in Aachen, I knew that Spain was going to be behind us already. I knew, you know, we all knew that it would be very hard to catch Great Britain, the Netherlands, and Germany. So you had sort of that as a given, but then how far we could be up the ladder from what we were predicted to be was, of course, my goal. And so Denmark, Sweden, and many, many other countries were behind us. We were 13th, and I think Denmark and Sweden were at least, you know, up near the 20s or something in there to go. So we had to wait till toward the very end when Tina Wilhelmsen went in to the Grand Prix, and the footing was not optimum for her horse, and he made some mistakes. So I was at the end of the warm-up area, where the warm-up area would go, you would go from the warm-up area to the tunnel, and they had a TV there under a little tent. So we were standing, a few of us, Kara Kirkland and I and some of the others were standing watching these horses go live from that tent, And I'm thinking, oh my God, we just beat the next country. Oh my God, we just beat Denmark. And then it was, of course, up to Tina Wilhelmsen. And I knew, because Robert Ross, my partner, is a great mathematician. And so every second he's texting me, letting me know what the next rider from the next team is going to need in order to beat us. And so as the test is going on, Robert Ross is texting me going, she's never going to get, she needs a 77.9 for, you know, to have Sweden come ahead of America. And normally she is able to get over 77 in a Grand Prix pretty easily, but it wasn't her day, and so America ended up fourth, and we were incredibly, incredibly proud. And, you know, I was so proud of all of our riders, all of the grooms and the support staff, and our, you know, great director, Jenny Van Weeren Page, and Rick Mitchell, our team vet. I mean, all the owners, everybody was there. And we ended up going to the NF tent, the Federation tent, and having a big toast to everybody afterwards. And it was just, you know, a great day. That was the beginning of what it ended up going on to become, just a super show for our riders who went on as individuals as well.
Well, before we talk about those individual performances in the special and the freestyle, Robert, let's also explain the implications of finishing fourth at these games and what it meant to qualification for Rio and the next Olympic Games.
Well, now you'll go to a sort of a, what I think is a very sore spot, because up until after London, fourth place would have qualified America under the old rules for the Olympic Games. And they changed the rules such that only the three medal-winning teams automatically qualify for the Olympics. So, you know, I feel that that was, one, an ill-advised rule change. I spoke about it in the final meeting, where we had a meeting of all stakeholders groups, that Tron Asmeyer presided over, and Frank Kemperman, and I spoke to the fact that I thought that this new ruling, where only the three top teams and only one, the winning Pan American Games team, will be qualified for the Olympics. And sadly, if you look at not only, say, the four best teams, but look all the way down to the seventh best team, or even the Canadians, who I can't remember if they were eighth or ninth, but the average of their scores would be over 70%. And even with this threshold met, the new rules are so Eurocentric that it is very, very plausible that one of the North American countries, Canada or America, will not be able to participate in the upcoming Olympics in Rio because of the way, of the nature of the qualifications now.
It means then basically that the only chance to qualify now would be to win at the Pan American Games in Toronto next year.
That's correct, unless the other team or another team has what is called a composite team, meaning that they have riders that would be so highly ranked in the world ranking list altogether that they could put those three individuals, or, you know, as a team.
So obviously this is going to be a subject for future discussion, Robert, but let's get back to WEG and the individual performances there, because three riders went through to the special. How did that day unfold from your perspective?
Well, you know, of course, we had hoped to have all three riders go on to the freestyle, but I think that it just wasn't a perfect day for Adrian Lyle and Wizard. The horse was a bit tense even in the warm-up and went on and had some problems in the test itself. But, you know, I have to say Adrian at 29 years old was so brilliant in the entire qualification system. so wonderful to work with and really did her job to help us to keep to make that team spot of fourth place. That, you know, yes, would I have loved for her to do better in the special, and I've seen her do just great specials, but, you know, we basically just were so thrilled with what she had done before that, you know, to me, you know, I wasn't so upset that it didn't, that she wasn't, you know, having that best day on that second day. The other two, Stephen Peters went in and, of course, you know, was his usual brilliant self as a rider, and he had a little bit less of a good day on his special than he had on the Grand Prix. I think that between the footing and the, you know, just the sort of the tension in the air or whatever, I think that, you know, it wasn't just as clean as the day before in the Grand Prix, but still, of course, was easily into the freestyle with that test. And Laura was just fantastic. And, you know, Debbie and I stood there watching Laura, and, you know, we're thinking, the first day, Laura, before she went in, she had said, you know, I'm feeling a little sick to my stomach. I'm feeling sort of, you know, like my stomach's churning. I said, honey, that's called nerves. She said, no, I'm not nervous. I said, yes, you are. She had not experienced, you know, the kind of nerves that you have when you're going down an Olympic or a world championship center line. She just didn't know what that was. So I explained to her that that's what that is, but it's actually a good thing. Don't worry about it. Just go with it. And, you know, and I reminded her that it's just another sandbox. And she went in, and then by the next day in her special, she just rode fantastically. And, you know, the judges and the audience and really the whole world has fallen in love with her and for Dottie's.
Absolutely. Well, she clearly got the butterflies flying in formation because she finished seventh, as we know, in the special with Stefan in 10th place. So going forward to the freestyle, we were looking for, obviously, an exciting climax to this competition. Robert, you must have been so thrilled to have these riders make it all the way, obviously, but very proud of your American performances, especially with Laura being the best placed American.
Yeah, you know, and with her becoming fifth in the world, and, you know, I just have to say, you look back on your own life when you're doing this with these others, and 20 years before in The Hague, I had ended up landing exactly fifth place with Devereaux in the same freestyle in the World Equestrian Games. And so it just, you know, is so fantastic when you sort of come full circle around and you see these kids that have taken your place and are just doing so well. And, you know, I have great hopes for of course, Laura, for all of them, and also for those who came along with us and did not make it onto the team. I hope that they look back, or at least one day all of them will look back, as I have in my life, to times like that, and see it as a building block toward not only their own greater future, but the greater future of American dressage.
Well, finally then, Robert, what was your biggest takeaway from this Games experience?
My biggest takeaway is my optimism with regard to America's potential to medal in Rio, to win, obviously, the Pan American Games, not just the one medal, but hopefully all medals, and to go on and medal in Rio. And I feel like we have great momentum right now, and we're going to keep building the machine that I have told everyone that I'm determined to produce in America, that starts with the youngest of our kids and goes all the way through our international elite riders, and produce medal winning teams at all of these different divisions.
Terrific. Well, lots to look forward to then. Coming home from these World Equestrian Games with the fifth placed freestyle rider in the world, a tremendous achievement. Robert, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program, and good luck with, obviously, the lead up to the Pan American Games.
Thanks so much, Chris. It's always fun to talk with you.
And a reminder that this podcast is available for download on iTunes to your smartphone podcast apps. And be sure to check out the September issue of Connection magazine, which has an article entitled My Dressage Mentor. Don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.